Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, senior editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guest is Craig McAreth, executive vice president of global service delivery at Rimini Street. Rimini Street is a publicly traded company specializing in third-party support for mission-critical systems at financial services organizations and beyond. Craig joins me on today's program to discuss the most significant challenges currently facing financial services leaders when it comes to driving the IT systems and infrastructure necessary to take advantage of data-heavy generative AI use cases. Without further ado, here's our conversation. Craig, thanks so much for being on the program this week.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Now, we've been having a lot of conversations more and more, especially with financial services leaders when it comes to IT. And I think it's reflective of the point we're kind of at writ large with AI adoption in this space, in that I think particularly financial services leaders are going to have to rethink entirely, you know, how they treat IT, how they work hand in hand with these folks. There's also kind of this double layer of you need to prepare these systems for AI adoption. And then actually, once you're on that track, there are generative AI tools, the newest of the new, that can actually help streamline those workflows in turn. So there's kind of this kind of engine or dynamo capacity of once you get started, the advantages that you're gaining can actually help speed along the process. But obviously, that needs to come after a conversation about how to get started. And I think a lot of financial services leaders are looking back at their IT teams. They're seeing a lot of challenges just in terms of cleaning house before they get even started at this point of the process. I'm wondering, what do you see as the biggest challenges currently facing financial services leaders when it comes to driving the IT systems and infrastructure necessary to take advantage of these new emerging generative AI use cases we're seeing?
Yeah, I see a few key challenges that all the financial services teams will be facing. You know, one of the obvious ones is that it's unclear as to what will be the future winner when it comes to generative AI. There's a lot of players out there. There's a lot of investment. There's a lot of hype, frankly, about it. And I'm sure that people are talking about that a lot. But who will be the future winner and where you should invest is really unclear. So I'd say that would be the top one, because picking that horse could be expensive depending on the approach. I think the second one that everyone's thinking about is the leakage of intellectual property. So when you're talking about feeding these models to be able to get them to give you something useful, then you get out what you put in. And so if you're putting in content and that content is yours and your IP, then how is that being used? What will the control of that be throughout its life cycle? Do you retain control of that, or are you giving up some of that control to benefit from broader libraries? I think the other piece that I consider, and this applies for all IT projects, of course, but you know, no more so in one that everyone's talking about the technology, is change management. So, you know, again, people say, oh, I'm going to solve this with AI. Really? Are you going to solve something with AI, or are you just saying that to get the business case approved? So, you know, the change management that comes with that, and understanding what do we mean when we say this is an AI project or an AI initiative, and then how do we bring those IT teams along? Because people don't want to get left behind in the IT space. You know, everyone's gotten into this IT world because they love learning and they love technology. So there's a lot of you know, vying for, well, am I on the AI wagon now? I'm contributing. So think of that along a people change management aspect, that you don't want to leave your good people behind, or worse, have them think, well, maybe I need to go somewhere else because, you know, my friends are all right into AI, but I seem to be missing the boat because, you know, my organization, perhaps they're a little bit more conservative and they might not have jumped onto the bandwagon.
Absolutely. I would say this also kind of comes hand in hand with a conversation, and we've laid the ground for this across different episodes of the show, also our sister program, the More General AI and Business podcast, in that I know, especially for financial services organizations, it's a little opaque where they're going to end up in terms of, do they need to go full-fledged with their digital transformations, or do they need an ad hoc digital transformation? Something that, with a bit more of an approach of, I don't think we're going to drink all the Kool-Aid. I don't think all generative AI is for us. I think only bits and pieces are for our organization. And how do we determine, you know, what works best for us rather than going wholesale? And I think it's in those conversations where you start to see the difference between an AI adoption initiative and change management becoming more and more part of the conversation, or less. If it's a bit more about doing a full-fledged digital transformation, then kind of the AI adoption team takes over as this entity that's going to transform the whole business. When a lot of the business is really going to stay the same, but it just needs to adjust to those specific points happening within the AI adoption team, that's where you kind of see a change management process or teams really kind of taking that ball and getting it down the field. I just want to make sure, do I have that right just in terms of the other conversations I know that we've had about the difference between, you know, change management and full-fledged adoptions that we've had both on this program and elsewhere on the platform?
It sounds like you could probably write the business case for that if you were pitching it. I think one thing I'd say on the digital transformation angle that you had there is that if you're selecting when AI makes sense as opposed to when it could potentially hurt the brand, that's the sort of business decisions that leaders need to be making here. And this is around, you know, am I really doing a digital transformation, or am I just, you know, getting my hand in the water is a very different thing. And I think that's one thing that, you know, we thought of a lot as we were embarking down the path of AI. We've been using this since 2019. So, you know, pretty early adopter, long before ChatGPT was, the media darling that it is today. Yeah. And it's around, you know, is this something that aligns with your brand and therefore it can be part of and synonymous with it? Or is there risk to your brand? Because again, you know, when an AI by its nature is not as predictable as traditional technologies. And so, you know, is there a risk to your overall brand? And of course, there you need to proceed with caution because, you know, we're talking about a market here, extremely conservative. Brand is everything, you know, it's about trust. And so, you know, is there a threat to your brand? You've got to be very proceed with caution.
Yeah, I think you're highlighting kind of like the real push and pull there in terms of, you know, we're able to narrow this down. We're on a podcast called AI and Financial Services, so we're not talking about every sector. We're talking about a very tech adjacent sector. So we're talking to a lot of business leaders who are probably more inclined to do full-fledged digital transformations. But as you point out, one of the big ways that big reasons that a lot of organizations pump the brakes on these things is the reputational risk. And a lot of these organizations, especially insurance companies, very large banks, are very defensive by nature. We've heard a lot about how hallucinations for now might be something of a temporary problem, that it's a bit like kind of Ethernet internet connections, in that we all know Wi-Fi is coming. But is Wi-Fi 10 years away, or is Wi-Fi kind of like in the beginning of the internet age, you know, the dial-up modems? I'm old enough to remember dial-up modems and the noise that they used to make. I'm in my late 30s. I'll date myself. But that was, like, in retrospect, that was such a brief glimpse of time that sound was all you heard when you logged on to the internet. And now these days, you know, of course, the kids, Generation Z, will never know the sound of a dial-up modem. As I'm starting to hear more and more folks come on the show, that are at the forefront of tackling problems like hallucinations, it doesn't quite seem like that simple of a solution to solve. It might be something a bit more philosophical going into the future. And even in my Ethernet cables analogy, I mean, I'm at my in-laws' house using their internet. They still rely on Ethernet cables. So these things, you know, even 10, 15, 20 years later, depending on the usefulness for you, these things might not go away as easily for everybody. But I'm just wondering, in terms of that defensiveness and the risks, obviously hallucinations, the probabilistic nature of generative AI, that's at the forefront of a lot of folks' minds. Do you see that, you know, that as these technologies get ironed out, even if we're never going to be rid of hallucinations wholesale, do you imagine that there'll be workflows and efficiencies into the future where these systems will reach a point of reliability and accuracy that comes at a threshold where a lot of the larger banking organizations and more defense-minded financial institutions will say, you know what, I think it's safe for us to really, really jump in the deep end here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and coming back to the modem analogy, yeah, I too can remember that that noise, and still you hear it sometimes used in movies and other things today. And
I wonder how many
people will realize what they're hearing. Like, they've probably never heard that. Like, connecting is just, you know, press a button and on they go. So, you know, where we're at the moment with the development of these capabilities and the rapid pace that there is, and every week there's, you know, new content coming out and different things happening. I think in that space where it's very cutting edge, it's going to be a long time before a defensive or conservative posture could be assumed with those tools. And I think that there's definitely a market emerging where corporate use of that technology in a more of a lockdown and controlled way, of which there's value, because if you're putting, again, your brand behind this, or you've got, you know, your data that's kind of in the mix there, is very important. I think that is yet to emerge as a clear, safe place that people can go. And, you know, as you're kind of learning and evolving and getting in here, you'll come across as a lot of libraries that are out there that are just, hey, just pull this down and use it. And you can, it's very helpful for rapid adoption. But by their nature, those libraries are fluid. They're changing all the time. There's a lot of development that's happening in there, and you can't really separate yourself from that that change. So I think from a conservative perspective, my time at Rimini Street, I was in the aerospace and defense sector, and then the financial services sector. And in those two sectors, you know, you have to be conservative. You have to be, you're a steward of data and information, which is extremely sensitive. And as a result, putting wholehearted trust in changing libraries and things that are really in flux is not typically an IT pattern that you see being adopted or being successful for the real business end of what the industries are about.
Absolutely. I think probably one of the other sort of brake pedals on adoption that I think will change over the next few years, and we see this in other industries as well, but AI tends to bring out a very good reason for competitors to share information, or at least start that conversation going. Yes, I see you smiling right now, so you know where I'm going with this. But especially in terms of IT, because it definitely seems like the best opportunity for banks to really come together and have a purpose to share information, or at least, you know, nudge their friends in the political capitals to create shared data repositories for a lot of these functions, tends to be around cybersecurity workflows and really ensuring that the data that they're holding is safe from nefarious interests. I'm wondering what you see as the possibilities there, because in my mind, if the fixes for probabilistic technologies, hallucinations, doesn't come from, you know, some Silicon Valley hotshot going, I've got it, the thing that fixes all hallucinations. To me, you know, just looking at the tools that are available to us, it occurs to me the solution's probably going to involve each individual organization with their bespoke models, integrating enough expert human feedback in those models to ensure that anything client-facing isn't going way off the radar, and part and parcel with that process is probably going to be some amount of shared data between competitors in a repository, especially on fronts of mutual interest like cybersecurity. I'm just wondering what you might think of that, just in terms of, you know, the actual solutions we see out there, aside from maybe, yeah, like I said, some Silicon Valley hotshot just figuring it all out.
I'd never be one to rule out the Silicon Valley hotshots.
I know.
There's still some incredible content coming out of that part of the world. But I think here we're talking about adoption at the corporate level. Right. And if you look back at each generation of technology, then it's been those that are implementing and using the tools and using them in the real world that are helping to move that further forward. And you're absolutely spot on where there's areas for collaboration which makes sense. Perhaps where it's non-competitive could be in the area of educating consumers around credit, for example. Could be in the area of cybersecurity collaboration. Could be in the area of, you know, working with communities, philanthropic efforts, for example. Some great ways where collaboration can occur and sharing can occur where there's no concerns of competitiveness, but also some great collaboration back and forth. And also, you know, this doesn't have to be just within the industry too. I mean, you can lean on other parallel industries and tap into the work that's going on in those spaces as well, because it's great to see this sort of evolution of technology. It's always been the case. There's always been in the IT sector, there's always been things that are evolving that are, you know, have been created and invented, and then people iterate and then it gets better, and then someone else has that idea and they iterate again. We're in a very interesting time where you can see those things happening. And in part because of the sharing of open source and, again, those libraries that I mentioned earlier, the on-ramp can be easier, which means that more people are getting in there and they're trying things. And that's exactly what we need tech to be, in my view.
Absolutely. We also know that the conversation around a lot of these technologies has changed over the last 5 years. You know, back 2019, you know, trying to get C-suites on board with this came from more of a defensive end of that conversation, a more skeptical end of that conversation. And I think maybe you'll agree, even the most defensive organizations, their C-suites, you know, their kids are using this technology. They're more excited about it now. They know they need to jump into the pool. The question is, do we jump in the deep end? Do we jump in the shallow end? I do want to point this question directly at what we're seeing in terms of the new generative AI market. These are much different technologies. I almost wish we had completely different words to describe the first generation rather than the second generation that we're now seeing of AI technologies. But what I really want to get to is, you know, a lot of C-suites are probably hearing out there that generative AI tools can help streamline IT workflows, and they're interested on getting on that you know, accelerated train, right? Like, let's get started. And then as we're getting started, the process will become faster. We can use these technologies to self-learn and improve themselves. I think that sounds nice when you read about it. And obviously you can't just jump in the pool and start in that way. So I'm wondering, you know, if your organization hasn't quite jumped in the you know, generative AI pool yet, you know, you're at least collecting data, you're using first generation deterministic technologies like predictive analytics and machine learning somewhere. You know, the C-suites hearing about this, they're excited. How do you want to temper that conversation? Who do you want in the room? And how do you want to guide management to understanding that, yes, we can get there eventually, but we really need to master our first generation capabilities first, and we want to clean house there, then go to the next level?
Yeah, I think people shouldn't discount the first generation of AI, you know, just because it's first gen. You know, look at that as a building block. And, you know, how would financial service leaders use these to solve these challenges? I think the key is to find real world business problems to solve that have a return on investment. Because you have to start somewhere. And if you start somewhere that's got a return, this is IT after all, that then lets you build more and more. If the first things that you put out there are really just for play and people say, well, that's nice, but it didn't really do anything for us, then you're not likely to get more shots at this and be able to build. So think of it as a building block. And it can be a building block that you can have, because it kind of start with a platform. And then you can build from there and incrementally add to it. I think that would be good. And I would say, and I'd say this for lots of IT projects in lots of different areas, but if a project can't pay for itself in the first year, and the project team that's implementing is not willing to stand behind that commitment that it will return whatever it costs in that first year, you need to look a lot harder at that project. If they're saying it'll give an ROI, they'll stand behind that ROI, and that ROI is going to be in the first 12 months, then lean in, because that's an area where, you know, you can get your hands around it. It's a building block. Mm-hmm. And don't get caught up on first gen, second gen. You're doing some AI work. You're in the game. You're on the field.
Right. Important point to temper all conversations about ROI and AI, because often, you know, that ROI doesn't manifest itself in this hard dollar amount that tells the C-suite, hey, you're saving this much money. It's going straight to your bottom line. Tends to be more philosophical than that. But to your point, it's, are they at least matching the goal they set out the year before to achieve, or do they have something to show in terms of bringing, you know, a new perspective philosophically to the table, saying, whoa, wait a minute, we have the wrong goal for our ROI, because that can be an even more meaningful result that can lead to more business value. If you at least had a project, even if it failed to achieve its goals on paper, if it at least gave you the insight to go, whoa, we have the wrong goal, that's almost might be just as valuable as finding all the ROI in the world and in direct dollar amounts and in direct payments.
Yeah, it would definitely have a lot of value there, and it's helping to guide the organization down the path, you know, where you should go. The other thing too, we talked about change management earlier, don't sure. let go of the site, the fact that this is something that the people in the IT team are going to want to play with. They're going to want to get their hands on it. They're going to want to go and experiment. And again, it comes back to some of the fundamentals of why people are in IT. It's a great place where you can play and you can experiment and you can kind of learn as you go. And what's the best way to learn something? Well, break it and then fix it. And that way you really understand it from, you know, from the inside out. So an initial project that might be seen as a failure could then lead to great successes down the line. You don't want to you know, totally throw that away just because something didn't work straight out of the gate, but how you expected it. And again, that's the nature of AI, right? You're not going to expect it. You're not going to be able to predict every result that you might get.
Really, and I mean, this is the probably one of the more difficult things for especially management C-suites to understand, which is that probably your best results are on the outliers of the bell curve. You either had so much, so obvious ROI, everybody's happy, nobody complains, or you had such a resounding failure that it told you the entire way you're looking at this is wrong. And that's just as good as everything going amazing, because those are the kind of insights you want right away. It's really that boring midsection, the top of that bell curve, that might be kind of the actual failure if you're measuring ROI. But irony of ironies, and that's the whole reason that that we host these conversations on the show and really try to dispel some unproductive mentalities that would operate on those assumptions. So Craig, really appreciate having you on the show this week. It's been very, very illuminating, and we'll have to have you back.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Wrapping up today's episode, I think it was great that Craig began his podcast appearance by noting the challenges financial leaders face in preparing IT systems for AI adoption, including cleaning house and rethinking workflows. In terms of buy versus build, he notes the challenge that determining the future winner in the generative AI space will be hard, with many players and investment and the potential for expensive mistakes. When implementing artificial intelligence, leaders must consider the potential risks to their brand and proceed with caution, especially in conservative industries. Craig also professed his belief that the market for corporate use of AI technology will emerge in a more controlled and locked-down way, with value in a safe place for data. He also highlighted collaboration opportunities in tech, including educating consumers, cybersecurity, and philanthropic efforts. C-suites are excited about generative AI, but Craig emphasizes that organizations must master first-generation capabilities before jumping in the deep end. And just before the close, Craig agreed with me on the importance of understanding that the best results often come from failed projects, as they provide valuable insights, but he also noted that these failures can lead to great successes down the line if properly learned from and experimented with. On behalf of Daniel Fajella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI in Business podcast.